What's going on, y'all? Welcome to another Friday night edition of the Play Caller Sports Talk Show. I'm your co-host, Stephen Box, joined as always by my tag team partner.
That would be your boy, Cool McCain.
And, you know, they call us the Play Callers because we call the shots around here, man. That's what we do, you know?
Something like that.
So, yeah, man, if anybody's joining us live tonight, of course, you can always interact with us in the chat. You know, we love to do that around here. We are the tag team champions of Interactive Sports Talk, after all. But if you're listening to us on the podcast, audio only, and you're like, man, I wish I could hang out with those guys and talk some sports with them. Friday nights, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, playcallersportstalk.com/live. That's where you do that at.
In the building, son.
In the building. So, yeah, man, I'm pretty excited, Cool, because NFC, AFC championship games this weekend. You know, people might not notice about us, right? But we do try to limit how much we talk about our own teams on this show, right? We try to, you know, not be super biased. It's not the 49ers or the Eagles podcast. So we try not to just make it all about our teams. But this week, it gets to be like at least 50% about our teams because we are playing in the NFC Championship game. I'm pretty excited about the fact that we actually get to talk about our teams exclusively for once. Nothing to say, man. Just a smirk.
Just a smirk, sir. Just a smirk.
Okay. So, yeah, man. You know what? Let's actually go ahead and start with that game. And you know, of course, we're talking about the AFC game too, and a couple of other topics from around the league that we're going to discuss tonight, but. Go ahead and kick it off because our game is the first game that's going to be on Sunday. It's 3 o'clock game. So we've been hearing about this game all week, man. I mean, everyone's talked about this game ad nauseum, what they think is going to happen, what they don't think is going to happen. I've seen people picking the Eagles. I've seen people picking the 49ers. And it's not surprising because these two teams are pretty evenly matched. So what are you looking forward to seeing? Obviously, other than, you know, hoping that your team wins, which, of course, we're both hoping for.
Well, I would like to thank the San Francisco 49ers fans for some foolhardiness, some tomfoolery that they did this week. Okay. And what I'm referring to, for those who may not know, is they went to the Rocky statue and they put 49ers stuff on the Rocky statue. And the reason I'd like to thank them for that is because this is the same tacticals that were taken in that blessed year of 2017 by the San Francisco 49ers. By the Minnesota Vikings. And history repeats itself. Yeah, it's going to be a good outcome. See, people have to understand, fans have to understand this. And this is, you know, we're fans. We like our teams. We love our teams. We want our teams to win. But when you go the extra level of disrespecting another team by taking their icon and basically turning it into your monument, so to speak. I don't know if you've ever watched the Dave Chappelle show and saw the skit where Prince was playing basketball. It was like game versus blouses. And then they got Prince mad. He was like, it's like, you're going to get that from the Eagles because of, you know, what the 49ers did. So, you know, thank you guys. And I have seen some people picking the Eagles, but I still hear a lot of the narrative of, you know, the 49ers are 12-0 and they're a way better team. And, you know, the Eagles are there and they're good too. But, you know, for me, it's just going to be what happens once these two teams actually get on the field. There's a dominant defensive line, heavy rotation in Philadelphia. There's also a dominant defensive line in San Francisco. So those two things, it's going to be whichever offensive line can better protect a quarterback. That's going to be the most important thing. There's a lot of other things to get into, but I'll let you go ahead and drop a few jewels, and then I'll come back in here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just gonna say, like, the whole Rocky statue thing, I mean, I think it's kind of stupid that people do stuff like that, but I'm gonna be honest, man. I don't think that's gonna have any outcome whatsoever this week on this game. It's gonna have zero impact. Because, let's be legitimate, Philadelphia Eagles fans were already showing up to this game rabid to begin with. I don't think that somebody throwing a 49er shirt on the Rocky statue is going to up the level of Eagles fans anymore. Y'all are already one of the most ridiculous fan bases in the country to begin with. I also don't think that that's going to necessarily motivate your players any more than what they would be, because it's the NFC Championship game. Of course, teams always, you know, talk about, oh, you know, we took this personal or whatever. I don't buy that stuff, man. Like, whenever you go out there for a game like this, you are maybe mentally telling yourself these things are important to you, but they're not really making a difference. Like, that's not really what ultimately matters in a game like this. What matters in a game like this is what you do on the field. And I expect both of these teams to bring it, man, because these are two teams that are both very physical, and they're going to fly to the football, and they're going to get after each other. So that's what I think is going to happen. And, you know, it's funny because we talk about the Rocky statue, but I've also had a lot of former Eagles players, Eagles fans, different people I've seen talking a whole lot of smack this week. And, you know, you don't think that stuff's going to go on the bulletin board in the 49ers locker room? You don't think that's going to make the 49ers show up?
I mean, well, according to you, it's not, because according to you, those type of things don't matter, is what you just said. So, I mean, it's kind of like you're saying this out of this side, you're saying this out of this side. So the Rocky statue is very synonymous.
Do y'all really care about the Rocky statue, honestly?
We do.
Y'all really care about that?
If we didn't, I wouldn't be talking about it, sir.
Yeah, I don't see y'all getting that hype over a Rocky statue.
Okay. You may not see it, sir.
But no, yeah. I'm not seeing it.
Oh, we definitely will. You'll see it come Sunday. That's when you'll see it. Okay. I think the thing is, yeah, there's been a lot of former Eagles players talking trash, but we're not going to pretend that the 49ers have been sitting on their laurels being humble all week saying, oh, this is going to be a great game, and, you know, the best team wins. So let's not do that either, because there's been some chirping from the 49ers side as well. So you're going to chirp to each other. But I think my point is, when you go past the talk, because everybody talks, right, to actually saying, hey, we know Rocky's the blue-collar symbol of Philadelphia, blue-collar city, blue-collar fan base. We embrace blue-collar players. And you basically say we're going to turn them into a 49ers thing because, you know, piss on the Eagles.
I'd have to go back and look, because I can't remember the last time we actually played y'all in Philadelphia. But I do very distinctly remember us putting 49ers stuff on the Rocky statue in, too. So I would be very curious to know if we actually won that game or not, because I can't remember. But, you know, that aside, you know, and looking at the actual game, what I find interesting in looking at the matchup, right, is both teams have dominant defensive lines. You have the better secondary, although my secondary is not garbage by any means whatsoever. But your secondary is a little bit better than mine. And I have better linebackers than you. You know, so defensively, these are the top two defenses in the NFL. Both of these offenses are also top five offenses. You're number two or number five. So when you look at this matchup, man, it's just like it's strength on strength on strength on strength, right? It's like there aren't very many weaknesses in either one of these teams. I think ultimately what this comes down to is your secondary, I think, has the ability to take our wide receivers out of the game, to limit Brock Purdy's options, right? And you're going to be able to get that pass rush, and you're going to force Brock Purdy to make decisions quickly. Now, where I think we can, you know, maybe have some success is in the running game and also over the middle of the field, because especially once we get that running game going, that's going to force your linebackers to have to come up and help. And that's what Dallas had to do. And that left a void in the middle of the field. And that's where Chris McCaffrey can go out. That's where George Kittle kind of feast at. That's where a lot of those, you know, in routes that we like to run, a lot of the slants, that's where that stuff's going to come into play. So I think that's really where the 49ers can try to have some success in this game, because I don't think we're going to win down the field. The Eagles, to me, and I mean, you feel free to give me your opinion here, but this is my thought on what I feel like y'all would have to do to win this game is you need to get your run going. Because if you can get your run going and we start dropping our safeties down into the box a little bit, my secondary now becomes susceptible to those deep passes. And that's where Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown can start to feast on us. So that, for me, becomes my biggest concern. And that might not even be your running backs. That might be Jalen Hurts running on us. But if you can actually get my safeties to start cheating up into the box a little bit, that's where we tend to get ourselves in a little bit of trouble.
So what the Eagles are going to want to do, definitely run the ball. That's been a staple of our offense for the past two seasons. But where I think we're going to see something that people may not expect or may not be considering, I'll say, is, you know, we brought in a couple of guys in, three names you might know, Robert Quinn, Linval Joseph, and Ndamukong Suh. And then we also got a gentleman back a couple of weeks ago by the name of Jordan Davis. Witty, what's going on, bro? By the name of Jordan Davis. So what that's done is that solidified the middle, right? I mean, I'm not saying that you can't get any yards, but it's not the same defense running that you saw 5-6 weeks ago. It's been solidified. Those guys have been around long enough to kind of play together, be confident in who they are, how they want to play, and what they want to do. As far as quarterback, I can tell you this. A lot of people have said, you know, like, oh, you know, so what, the Eagles have the number one sack defense. I just want you to understand, 70 sacks. The next closest team has 55. The Eagles are going to get after the ball, and it's not bringing any extra but Hassan Reddick. We're not going to put 5 and 6 in the box. We're going to expect people to be disciplined, stay to their gaps. If you get outside and you're able to go long and get a couple of yards, so be it. What we did learn from Dallas last week, well, there are ways to minimize the dangerous abilities that you have to run the ball. Not completely contained. That's impossible, but to minimize. One of the things is being smart with the ball. If we have portions of the game where we're not going to be able to run, utilizing the short pass game. That's going to be Grant Calcaterra, Jake Stahl, possibly A.J. Brown, and Dallas Goedert. Those are going to be the guys who are going to, we're going to want to carve you up in the short game. It's not going to be the same guy every time. That's the whole point of having that diverse group that can do that. Devonta Smith, he could do it, but he's not the first guy that you want going underneath, getting a 5 or 6 yard pass and getting rocked, right? That's not the first guy that you want to do that. He's about the size of Kyler Murray. So that's not what you want. But defensively, I think definitely staying with your assigned gaps, discipline, allowing the game to slow down and play, not overthinking what's happening ahead of time, not trying to figure out what everybody's doing pre-snap as much, but actually just seeing what's happening and reacting to it. So being more reactionary, I think, is going to be important. When you have guys like Ayuk, Kittle, yourself, and Debo, obviously making sure we pay attention to McCaffrey, even if it's a pass play and he's in the game, because he has the capability to exploit the game in that way and swing it in your favor. And disguising things for Brock Purdy, making him see one thing before the snap and actually giving him something else after the snap. These are the things that you do to young quarterbacks. They may not always work, but those are the chances that you want to take and the things that you want to do. You want to make the game as difficult for him as possible. You want him to be the main guy that you're trying to make plays. And if he does, hey, it's just going to make it even closer. But you want to make him be the guy. You want the game on his shoulders. That's what we want. We want Brock Purdy to have to come out there and throw for 300 and some yards, no turnovers, and make the right reads, throw the ball away at the right time, and put the game on his back. That's obviously what the Eagles want. That's kind of what Dallas wanted last week, but you wouldn't allow it to happen.
So it's interesting because I knew you were going to bring up the additions to your defensive line. And so I actually went and looked at the numbers. So for this season, the Philadelphia Eagles have given up about 115 yards per game rushing. Okay. And for the time since you added those guys, you've been averaging about 105. Now, obviously, the games before that was going to be higher than the 115 because that's your season average. Mm-hmm. So I would say you've probably reduced your run yards per game by about 15, 20 yards. But you're still giving up over 100 yards rushing per game. So, you know, not terrible, but, you know, definitely there's going to be some opportunities for the 49ers to run the football still, right? The other thing that the 49ers do, and this is where I feel like Christian McCaffrey really unlocked this offense so much and why Brock Purdy's been able to have the success that he's had, is we don't just line guys up in their traditional places. You know, we put the same personnel on the field, and within the context of those same guys being out there, sometimes Deebo might be in the backfield, Christian McCaffrey might be a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll take a guy like Juszczyk and put him at wide receiver. So now what that forces you to do is you're now going to put a corner on Juszczyk. Well, if you're putting a corner on Juszczyk, that means a linebacker is now trying to cover Deebo or McCaffrey coming out of the backfield. And that's a mismatch every single time. But now, if you want to switch that up and you want to have a linebacker come over there and cover him, and then, you know, have your corner trying to, you know, cover a guy out of the backfield, there's going to be ways that Kyle Shanahan's going to manipulate that, right? He's going to try to find ways to get that. And that's why I think one of the important things of this game is going to come down to the coaching. It's going to be this chess match. Because when you have two really evenly matched teams, coaching is going to play a big part of it. So that's where it's going to be interesting. Because I do feel like we have the better coaching staff. I don't know if you agree with that, but I feel like we have the better coaching staff.
So I'll say this. Obviously, that's what you're going to try to do. But we have a safety who's really a corner. We have our third corner who is actually going to be back and playing this week. He is practicing. He is going to be playing this week. So Avanti Maddox will be on the field. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson will be back at safety. So when you do those exotic things, we're going to have the personnel who play the corner position that are going to be able to match up with them. So we're not going to ask a linebacker to cover Christian McCaffrey. We're not going to ask one to cover George Kittle. We're going to ask them to help out on George Kittle because he's a big mountain of a man. But we have guys that can cover them. So we have something that other teams don't have. We have four guys that start that can and do play at times cornerback. So that's something that other teams do not have to match up with you moving your pieces around the field, which we will do. And as far as how many yards we give up a game, I mean, we have big runs that happen at the end of the game when we've already sealed a lot of these games away. We have times where we go into prevent offense where we just run the ball a couple of times, slide down, and run out the clock. Stupid things which allow us to have more yards that should be scored on us. So, and, you know, stats are fine. You know, some people like to look at stats. But having watched every snap twice that this team has played this year, I know that when they put their mind to it and when they need it, they're going to focus in on that run as well because they know that they have that support. They know that they can go four deep with guys who can cover. So that's not something that falls into a mismatch as it does with other teams. I do think where you have the advantage is you can put out Elijah Mitchell and you can put out Christian McCaffrey at the same time. You can send Christian McCaffrey out to wide receiver. You can send Elijah Mitchell out to wide receiver. So you can kind of cross up that way because that brings even more of a dimension in that we'd have to cover. And then obviously you check as well as a blocker. So that's somebody else we have to pay attention to. That's where I think you will have a slight advantage as far as what you're doing. I think the chess match, you know, it's going to be important, but it's not going to be as profound as people want to make it out to be because a guy like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson being back, being healthy, the versatility that he brings, the background as a corner that he brings, that's going to allow him to do some things that we haven't seen since he was injured. We were getting a lot of turnovers, a lot of interceptions before his injury. So now that he's back, I anticipate that starting to turn, especially now that he's going to be able to actually go back to safety. He's had to play our third corner the last couple of weeks because Avanti Maddox wasn't back, and Josiah Scott is garbage.
Well, you know, by that same token, you know, we also have a guy who's been a Pro Bowler at both safety and a nickel corner in Jimmy Ward, playing in that third corner slot. We have a Pro Bowler in Hufanga in the safety position. Yep. We also have Javarius Ward back there. And, you know, people have been trying to pick on Lenore, and he's been making them pay for that here lately. Got a couple of interceptions to his name. And then, you know, you got the Wiley veteran back there in the secondary as well. So, you know, that's why I say, man, like, these two teams are so evenly matched. You know, like, we're constructed slightly differently, but these two teams are so well constructed. And, you know, for us, I think the biggest difference is linebacker. I feel like that's where we have the strength of our defense, really. I mean, yes, people talk about the defensive line, which gets a lot of pressure. But Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw are absolute wrecking machines. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that we're going to have those guys really paying a lot of attention to Jalen Hurts this week. At least one of them will probably be spying him.
That's good.
They'll be taking the running backs out of the equation. And, I mean, we all saw what Fred Warner can do in coverage last week. That dude is an absolute beast. So, you know, I'm excited for this game, man. Like, this is a true old school battle, right? Like, this is the kind of matchups that we used to get on a weekly basis in the playoffs in the NFL that I don't really feel like we get very often anymore. So I'm looking forward to this one, man. It's going to be smash mouth. And it's going to come down to who's going to make that mistake that's going to cost their team.
I think also it's going to come down to who does some things that we haven't seen from them successfully, because you're going to need to throw some wrinkles in, and both teams are clearly aware of that. So it's who can get the wrinkle that they haven't used or haven't used recently to work. I think this was one of the reasons that we just started trotting out a putrid offense once we kind of had clinched the playoffs. That last 4 or 5 weeks is because we didn't want to put a lot of the things that we may want to do now on film. I don't like that logic. We'll see if it works. But I'm more along the lines of, hey, man, go out there and practice the things you want to do in game situations. They've been more on the cutesy side. We're going to hide some things and some things we've done earlier in the season, but we're not going to do them the last couple of weeks. We're going to kind of hold some things back. So we'll see if that is a detriment or if that's a positive, or even if it matters at all. Yeah. But I think turnovers, who can control the clock, whether it's the run or the short pass game or a combination, who can get the big play down the field once or twice and make it work. You know, I think we definitely have two top 5 to 10 corners. We have a third corner that plays tremendous when he's on the field. We have a safety who can help cover in the back. TJ Edwards is not a horrible guy by any means. So, you know, neither is Kaiser White. You know, they're not at the level of the guys that you have, but these are guys who've made plays for us all year as well from the linebacker position, which is actually greatly improved from previous seasons. And that's really kind of sad, but true. You know, the thing about it is there's a lot of different things that you could really say. There's a lot of different things that could really happen. But that line is a monster that Philly possesses. We go very deep at, you know, nose tackle, defensive end, you know, linebacker. We do really well. Reddick is technically a linebacker, but with the way we've been using him, he's been kind of up on the line a lot. He's been helping out. In place, TJ Edwards has been put in a lot of crazy situations. Kaiser White, of course, I mentioned as well. Then you think about Marcus Epps. So here's a wild card. Marcus Epps came in, looked at him last year, even as a fan. He said, are we going to really keep this guy or are we going to replace him? The growth that he's had at the other safety position, that's been the key to unlocking what we've been able to do defensively. You don't hear his name a lot. But you need a big play, and you say, I'm not going Ed Johnson. I'm not going to throw it near that crazy boy Reed Blankenship. I'm going to go for the other safety, whoever he's on or running his side of the field. He makes the plays when they're available. And that's when you have a great safety, you want the other guy to be a guy you're not talking about unless it's positive. So if we're not saying anything about him, that's cool because it means he's being overshadowed. but he's still doing his job. If he's getting burnt, he's getting ate up, he's not doing where he's supposed to go, we hear about him a lot. Yeah. So I think, and I mean, we've already agreed that my DBs, that group is a little bit better overall. But I do have a slight concern if you guys do begin to get the run going. But I think we'll still say, look, you guys just got to be disciplined. We're not putting extra people up. I love the fact that I feel like you're going to put someone to spy on Jalen Hurts. It takes someone from being able to make plays as a in a passing game on defense because they have to spy him. Because even if it is a pass play, you can't be negligent with that duty, because if you give Jalen Hurts a sliver, he's gone. So that means we're going to be playing essentially 10 on 11 on passing plays, because you're going to have that guy focused on Jalen Hurts. That works for me.
Well, I mean, I would say in all honesty, we play a lot of zone anyways. So I don't really think that the idea of kind of spying Jalen Hurts necessarily takes anybody out of anything that we want to do. That's kind of what we do in the first place. Now, on plays where we're playing man, then maybe we don't have a spy. That's where Jalen Hurts could actually hurt us with his legs a little bit. Defensively, we have to be really smart about the way we rush the passer. Because you don't want to give Jalen Hurts those lanes to escape out of the pocket in. And, you know, one thing that I found interesting when I was actually kind of looking through your running stats was, in a few games this year where quarterbacks have actually had some pretty decent rushing yardage against you. I mean, not like, you know, mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson, yeah. Justin Fields type rushing performances or anything crazy like that, but, you know, like 30, 40, 50 yards rushing for quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, there might be an opportunity there for, you know, Brock Purdy to use a little bit of his athleticism and get a couple runs in. I mean, I'm not suggesting that we do design runs for him or anything like that, but, you know, just there might be some opportunities there that when things break down for him to just get outside of the pocket, try to pick up a little yardage, there might be opportunities there for that. Again, not advocating for that to be a part of the game plan, not saying we should do that as a design run, because if we end up with Josh Johnson coming in, I'm not feeling very good about our chances. So we need to keep Brock Purdy healthy. No intentional running of Brock Purdy, please. Okay. But you know, the other thing I kind of look at too is this offensive line, defensive line thing, right? And it's going to be interesting because you clearly have one of the, if not the best offensive lines in the league. So I'm going to be really intrigued to watch like Nick Bosa going, and you know, Bosa moves around, but I think he'll probably spend most of the game going against Lane Johnson. So that'll be a fun matchup to watch.
That'll be a juicy matchup. Lane is out there one arm pancaking people.
Yeah, and then obviously Eric Armstead, you know, in the middle, is going to, you know, be fun to watch him kind of go against some of those guys, especially, you know, whenever he gets matched up against Jason Kelce. That could be a really fun one to watch too. On the other side of it, you know, I'm not even going to start going through names because y'all got like 20 billion defensive linemen. But, you know, obviously whoever lines up against Trent Williams, that's going to be a fun matchup to watch regardless. Because Trent Williams just engulfed Michael Parsons this past week. That was fun to watch. But
that was fun to watch. I got to admit, that was fun to watch.
The inside of my offensive line is something that we thought at the beginning of the season was going to be a really big weakness. And they've actually played well, especially Aaron Banks has played really well. You know, we've gotten good play at center. Right guard has been a little bit hit or miss. We've actually had two guys rotating in there, but they've actually played well. They haven't knocked it out of the park. They're not Pro Bowlers, but they've played well. And for me, McGlinchey's still kind of the question mark, but he's actually played pretty well. Getting judo flipped by Micah Parsons aside. He's actually played pretty well the last half of this season. Man, I'm sure he got ribbed hard in this week in film study. So I know he's going to come out with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder this week for sure. But, you know, that's what's going to be fun for me to watch is like these two offensive and defensive lines going at it because there's a lot of talent on those lines.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a plethora of talent between those. Like I said, it's going to be
Five guys that have double digit sacks, four or five.
Five, sir. Yeah, that's ridiculous. the leader of which is Hassan Reddick, wasn't even a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. That's okay. More fuel to the fire. Nick Sirianni's not even mentioned for Coach of the Year. More fuel to the fire. Jalen Hurts is not going to win MVP. We know that.
Yeah. If, more fuel to the fire. Considering the way your team looked without Jalen Hurts, Nick Sirianni didn't deserve to even be mentioned in Coach of the Year. Because clearly without Jalen Hurts, he couldn't get the job done.
Well, he didn't try. I mean, it's a fair argument, but you have to look from the perspective of what he's even said at his own press conferences. I mean, without coming out and saying it, he didn't give a flying monkey's nuts if we won anything more than just enough games to get first. He didn't care that we lost to the Cowboys. He didn't care that we lost to the Saints because he knew he had week 17 and 18 in his pocket, and he would just bring Jalen back if he had to make sure we got the number one seed. That's all he cared about. And if we would have gotten it without Jalen Hurts needing to play, we wouldn't have seen Jalen Hurts in week 18. Nick Sirianni didn't care how many games we won at the end of the season. He just cared that we got the number one seed. And we can
coach you dirty today, sir.
And we can dislike that philosophy, but if it works, it works. We don't know if it's going to work. We'll find that out if this week, and then if we win in 2 weeks. But he didn't care. And it worked because we were the number one seed. And that's all he ever wanted.
I mean, you already know that it worked because you're playing at home this week. And, you know, you demolished the Giants last week. So we know that it worked.
Well, no disrespect to anybody. I know this is a Giants fan. But that wasn't, I'll say, a crowning achievement for the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not going out pumping my chest because we beat the Giants.
You guys should definitely pump your chest, man. I feel great about it. Come on.
Nah, why? We've done that already.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Come in. Go ahead. Come in with your head swollen up. Get y'all destroyed the Giants, man. Go ahead.
Why would we do that? If anybody's head would be more swollen, it would be the team who beat America's team, their rival, not us.
Well,
according to we'd be the team we already had whooped just that bad. You know, in the season. So we just did what we did in the record season. Nothing special.
So yeah, man. So obviously no need to even bother throwing out picks for this game. You're picking the Eagles, I'm picking the 49ers. We'll see which one of us is right Sunday. But let's move on over to the AFC. I saw your mouth move, but I didn't hear anything.
I said yes we will.
So let's move over to the AFC, man. So we got the Cincinnati Bengals going against the Kansas City Chiefs. Rematch of last year's AFC Championship game. So how do you see this one going?
So I've said this before, and I'll say it again. It's a very simple principle here. There's one team that's going in here with their head stuck up in the air, you know, feeling like we own the other team. We've beaten the last three times we played them. We're overlooking the fact that our offensive line is in shambles and that our quarterback is getting killed on a weekly basis. There's one team that doesn't have a number one receiver, right? Let's talk about it. Juju Smith-Schuster, nobody's number one receiver. Justin Watson, nobody's number one receiver. MVS, nobody's number one receiver. Mecole Hardman, nobody's number one receiver. Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore. None of these guys are number one receivers at this time. Maybe Sky Moore, maybe Kadarius Toney, right? Because they're young guys, they're a little bit more seasoned, a little bit more playtime, possibly. But make a long story short, the Chiefs don't have the greatest line, right? But they have a solid line, right? They have guys that can play. They have guys that can go out there and block, make sure their quarterback is protected because he's going to be limping. I mean, let's be real. We're talking about him getting out. Today's Friday. We're talking about the day after tomorrow on a high ankle sprain that happened last Sunday. Yep. It's going to hurt him. It's going to limit what he can do. It is. But he's still Patrick Mahomes. He still has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because, you know, they've got this guy that's always chirping on the Bengals. Named Eli Apple. Mm-hmm. And I would love to play the Bengals if we were to make it to the Super Bowl just so we could expose him as in as Nnamdi Asamoah 2.0 with a bigger mouth. You think about tight end, we know who has the advantage there. Clear advantage is going to be Travis Kelce. Hey, Noah Gray might be a better tight end than the tight ends for Cincinnati on a, you know, on a consistent basis. And let's say something happens. Mahomes can't continue to go, right? Or he needs to take some plays off. Chad Henne has proved in his system to be a capable backup.
Yeah.
So you have another guy if you need to pull Mahomes out for a little bit and say, hey, man, you're going to take some plays off, go rewrap your ankle, go rest a little bit, ice it a little bit before halftime. You have that luxury. Running back, Jerick McKinnon, he's out there playing like Christian McCaffrey. You got Isaiah Pacheco. He's out here, finally said it right. He's out here just mindless, wild. You still got Ronald Jones, who, you know, not great, but he can get you yards if you need it. So there's a lot that's there for Kansas City offensively. So for me, I think defensively, they're going to be able to do some things because of what is going to be out there for them. This line of Cincinnati, it's struggled all year. Like I said, they're down multiple starters. They're playing in Kansas City. You know, they're you got the Bengals and their fans running around talking about this is Burrowhead Stadium, like really arrogant. And it's probably not a wise decision.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like you talked about the whole Rocky statue thing earlier, and I have to say that us putting a 49ers t-shirt on a Rocky statue pales in comparison to you running around giving a brand new name to someone's stadium and name it after your quarterback. That is probably not really going to sit very well. And that's a very loud crowd there in Kansas City as well. Now, one thing you didn't mention there, and I'm going to just assume that you were so kind to leave this for me.
Gotta leave you something, man.
Is that the Bengals are playing with a really big chip on their shoulder right now, right? They are riding this as far as they can. I mean, it started with the, you know, game against the Ravens where, you know, they're like mad, oh, you know, the coin flip. And we don't, you know, we don't think it should come down to a coin flip. All they had to do was go out and win the game. And there was no, and there wasn't going to be a coin flip. But rather than just saying, oh, we're going to go out and win the game, they wanted to go off and, you know, go on this tangent about it, right? So when I look at it from that perspective, right, I say, well, is this team going to go in there with that chip on their shoulder still, right? Because they're still talking about it, right? They're still, oh, you know, the neutral site AFC game, we're mad because you're selling tickets for it, right? And now this week, it's if the game against Buffalo had been played and we would have won, we would have had home field. We'd be playing in Cincinnati today. You know, is that going to be enough for them? I believe that's right. Because there was conversation about why did they not consider the Bengals as part of the equation for the neutral site. So you could double check that, but I believe that's right. I've heard a few people talking about it this week, so I'm assuming it's correct. I haven't verified the numbers.
Well, the thing is, the Bengals were 12-4, right? So let's say they played the game and won it. They'd still only be 13-4. The Chiefs are 14-3. So I don't believe there would have been a way that they would have had the number one seed. I think the best they could have did was two.
I think the idea is, if we're looking at the end of the records, yes, you're correct. But I think it's at the time that it was, because the Chiefs obviously still had a game to play.
Right. But what I'm saying is, the Raiders regardless. Yeah, they were going to beat the Raiders. So even if you won the game, you'd have been 13-4. The Chiefs would still beat the Raiders, so they still would have been first.
Yeah. But that was kind of the argument, was like, you know. But yeah, so I mean, they've got this whole like chip on their shoulder thing, and it's like, to me, I always kind of think like a team that needs a chip on their shoulder how far is that chip going to really take you, right? Because you have to always find another reason to be mad. And maybe they got one last round of madness in them. I think it would run out by the time they got the Super Bowl, like, because then what are you going to be mad about, right?
Well, the thing is, what are you going to be mad about this week?
Yeah, you're
running around talking about Bureau Head Stadium. You're not, you know what I'm saying? You're not in a position where you're walking around with a chip on your shoulder. You're in a position where you're strutting in thinking you're going to go in and smack these guys. And the thing is, I don't like to say this because, you know, Andy Reid left us high and dry. We should have won his championships. He's done a pretty good job at Kansas City, right? I don't think he feels good about you running around talking about Bureau Head Stadium either. I don't think he feels good that you continually are keeping him, you know, you kept him last year and you have an opportunity to do so again from advancing to the Super Bowl. So I think, you know, Cincinnati, it's been great. I've loved the run you've been on last year, getting back to the AFC Championship game this year. But I truly believe you're going to make it a game. Like, I don't expect either of these games to be blowouts. I think these are the four best teams when they play to their best. And it's been magical watching you guys, but I think the run's over.
I mean, for me, you know, I do feel like if Patrick Mahomes was healthy, it might be different. And let's not discount this Cincinnati offense, okay? Yes, their offensive line is banged up, but they clearly have superior receivers. Their running game is not exactly bad, right? They actually, with Joe Mixon and P. Ryan, actually have two really good backs themselves. So they're going to be able to still move the ball. And let's be honest, even going back to last year, the Bengals offensive line was horrible. Joe Burrow might actually struggle more behind a good offensive line, because I think he's so used to having to get the ball out of his hands quickly. He's not used to sitting back there and having time.
Well, we won't know that this year.
I don't know how much that affects them.
Well, here's the thing. It's not about, well, for me, it's not about him having the time. It's about just being hit so many times that you start to get the shakes a little bit. You start to get a little nervous, right? You start to hear footsteps. Your clock starts to speed up a little bit. That 1/1000 is not 1/1000, it's 1/1000, 2/1000, right? It speeds up a little bit. You're starting to get the ball out quicker because no quarterback wants to sit there and just be beat up all game. And I feel like that's what we're going to get with Joe Burrow. They have running backs, and I wasn't going to discount those guys at all, but, you know, have to leave you something to talk about, right? But with the difference to me is McKinnon's ability to be a wide receiver. Neither of those guys on Cincinnati can be a wide receiver to that extent. Can they catch the ball? Yeah, but they're not. McKinnon right now is out there looking, like I said earlier, like a Christian McCaffrey type guy. He can give you the run yards in a running game, and he can turn around and make big plays for you in the passing game as well. Major 40, 50-yard touchdown passes as a running back on a regular basis. That's not something that everyone has. So I think that makes a difference. Pacheco clearly is a dominant traditional running back. Small guy, but he makes up for it. So I think you look at that edge, you can control the clock some. You can take some of the onus off of Mahomes. You have a capable backup, as I said earlier. So if you need to take him out closer to halftime, get him shot up, just get his legs some rest, maybe elevate it, throw some ice on it, get him ready for the second half. You have the luxury to feel confident. You have another guy to put in to finish out the half, and you still can possibly get points. Say Joe Burrow gets hurt, right? Not wishing him paint hurt on anybody. Who's coming in? It's not a guy that's played as well as that offense as Chad Henne. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, if it comes down to it, you know, if Chad Henne has to come in, I almost feel like it's an improvement, right? And that's not any kind of knock whatsoever on Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, without the mobility, you may be right.
Yeah, but, I mean, if Mahomes can go out there and he's not at limited as we think he might be by the movement, then that's, you know, it's a different game. But, you know, we saw some of those throws he tried to make in the second half of that game last week. And it didn't look good. It looked like he should have just let, you know, his backup stay in there, right? So, to me, Mahomes tried to come out. He tried to play on that ankle. It didn't really look that good. And this Cincinnati defense is good enough that if you go out there and you start throwing balls out there and you're trying to just get out there with your arm strength alone, you're not really able to step into your throws, you're going to throw some picks. Instead, let Chad Henne go in there and do things if you can't go out there and be who you are.
Patrick Mahomes is not going to let Chad Henne go out in the AFC Championship game and play if he can walk. We both know that. Come on, man. Come on, son.
Come on, son. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying it is what it is. At the end of the day, man, I think this is going to be another close one. This might be the best weekend for NFC Championship games we've had in a while, or for NFL Championship games. But ultimately, man, I'm picking Cincinnati in this one. I mean, I get it. Like, there's a lot of reasons for Kansas City to win this game, right? I mean, you got Mahomes. We all know what he can do. I think Joe Burrow is on the same level, though. I think those guys are kind of, you know, right there next to each other. You know, both running attacks are pretty good. The Bengals obviously have better receivers. Both of these defenses, I think, are a little underrated, right? They're not as good as our defenses, but these are two solid defenses. They're not terrible by any means. So it's going to be interesting, but I think that ultimately for me, Patrick Mahomes not being healthy and knowing that, as you said, he's not going to come out of that game, I think could end up hurting Kansas City.
Now, who has the best tight end in this game, sir?
Oh, there's no question about that, sir. I didn't even – not even – listen, you know I love George Kittle.
That's a buck. That's a buck 50 and two touchdowns automatic out of Kelsey this week.
You know I love George Kittle. Dallas Goedert is a great tight end for you, but if – Kansas City goes to the Super Bowl, they're going to have the best tight end in the Super Bowl, too, no matter which one of us they're playing.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the league, period. But he says, the Cowboys and the Giants are out, so the Super Bowl is safe for everyone.
The Bills being out helps it be safe for everybody, too, Witty.
Josh Allen is competing with Kirk Cousins to be the Dak Prescott.
Hey, all I'm saying is we got the black Kirk Cousins, the white Dak Prescott, both out of there. Josh Allen, I know that he never was healthy after the injury. He never was 100%. You could tell. It was unfortunate. I would love to see that Bills team be the best that they could be this year. But maybe we'll see that next year when he's more healthy, because he's got to get that arm healthy. And then he's going to be back to being the Josh Allen that we saw before the injury. And I mean, I said that when he got hurt, you know, talked about the injury, how it affects your ability to be accuracy and how much strength you're able to generate for throws, accuracy, spiral. Those are things that, you know, hurt him. You saw it.
So who are you taking, man?
Kansas City.
Okay.
I thought it was clear.
I mean, it seemed like it, but you know, I just wanted to know.
Kelce Super Bowl. Kelce.
So we're actually taking different picks in both games. This week. So I feel much better about that, man, because we've agreed way too many times this year. So it's good to be back to completely disagreeing on picks.
Kelce Bowl, baby. Kelce Bowl.
The only Kelce Bowl I'm interested in seeing is Kelce brother sitting at home eating a bowl of cereal.
That's not true. You want to see it. You just hate it because when it happens, it means your team's not there. What up, Lamar? So just to bring context to these statements, Lamar is a Chiefs fan. Yeah.
Yes, Kelce Bowl is not headed your way. Because
and Lamar, as you can tell.
There's nobody named Kelce that plays for the Bengals or the 49ers, so it can't be the Kelce Bowl.
And Lamar, as you can tell, this guy's on some other stuff. But we're gonna let him do him.
We can't have a Bosa Bowl though, because Joey Bosa threw a temper tantrum and kept getting 15-yard penalties. He got his team eliminated from the playoffs.
He wouldn't be able to beat either one of these teams either, so it's all good. That's true. He would have made it this far. He just would have made it one more week.
That's true. I can't really. I can't knock that. That's accurate. He would have just been gone the next week for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. So that's our previews. That's our thoughts on the championship games. I know we had a couple other topics as well.
And I will say while we're getting that together, these are going to be two exciting games. I'm looking forward to watching them both. I'm looking forward to both to all four of the seeds going out there and tearing it down for us. A lot of great plays. I expect. A lot of great things. Lamar has a question for you, Steve.
How the 49ers going to stop a team that put up nearly 80 sacks? So, first of all, 70 is not nearly 80. It's 70. But here's the question I have for you. Do we have to stop a team to put up 70 sacks? The answer how to stop that is very simple. Don't try to ask your quarterback to drop back and throw the ball 40 times. Run the freaking football. That's how you stop a team. You can't sack a running back. That's how you stop a team that has 70 sacks on the season, is you run the ball down their throats. That was pretty simple.
Do you shoot the J?
You do not shoot the J. Because that would be basketball, and that might just result in an interception, and we don't want that. That sounds like a terrible, terrible idea.
Shoot it.
No, I mean, look, we talked about it earlier, Lamar. The key for the 49ers and the Eagles is very simple for both teams. Got to be able to run the football. That's what both teams want to be able to do. The team who runs the football the best might win that game.
And beat somebody down, too. Just beat them down.
And I'm kind of here for it. Because, you know, being a 49ers fan, I'm used to ugly wins. So I don't mind them. Go ahead and grind this thing out.
I mean, I said with Lamar yesterday, look, man, truth is the truth. All it is 1 point, 30 points, 5 points, 2 points. I just want to see Bird Game with Mo at end.
Like you say, though, 1 point, 30 points don't matter. If the number next to your score is bigger than the other team's, you're going to the Super Bowl.
That's all I'm worried about.
Yeah.
That's all I'm worried about.
And then once we get there, we'll worry about, you know, who's next. But as our tribal chief and fellow 49ers fan would say,
you know, man, there's several things that fans of the Philadelphia Eagles would say, but I think one that would be near and dear to your heart, the great Kobe Bean Bryant would say, the goal is not to get there, the goal is to win it, in his Philadelphia Eagles jersey that he had. So I'm going to roll with him.
So Lamar says, the only way 49ers win is success on the ground. Low-key, Giants has success on the ground but couldn't do nothing in the air.
That's because they couldn't do nothing in the air. They had to do something, Lamar.
And that's the thing. I do think the 49ers can have some success running the ball. They don't have to, like, go out there and decimate the Eagles on the ground. They just need to be able to run the ball enough to get guys out of position and open up things in the middle of the field. That's it. That's what the 49ers are looking to do offensively. It's not a complicated game plan. Now, watching all those guys going to shifts and motions and figuring out who's lining up where and all that other stuff, that's where the gameplay comes in. But yeah, we'll see. So you mentioned the late, great Kobe Bryant, which, you know, I'm a huge Kobe fan. You know, we are at the anniversary of his death actually was yesterday. But, you know, did you have like a favorite Kobe memory or something you wanted to share?
So one of, I gotta laugh when I say this, man. One of my favorite Kobe memories was the game where he was so pissed off at the teammates that he wouldn't pass anybody the ball. Right? And the reason it's one of my favorite Kobe moments is because Kobe's basically like, I don't give a flying flip if we win or lose. Y'all gonna see, I'm Kobe, darn it. You know, obviously, he, you know, it's a little bit different what he was saying, but I just love the fact that even though he had that hunger, he understood that I'm gonna have to teach these dudes a lesson. And the way I'm gonna teach them a lesson is I ain't gonna pass you the ball.
Yeah.
You go ahead, you gonna work, you're gonna play defense for me, you're gonna get rebounds, you're gonna do the things I want you to do. And you're gonna earn the opportunity for me to give you the ball. And I was there for it.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of stories I've heard over the years, man, and it's, you know, especially since his passing, we've heard a lot of people come out and tell different stories or whatever. And, you know, I think one of my favorite stories that I actually, you know, heard was, and I forget who the player was, but they were playing against the Lakers. And so they showed up at the gym, and Kobe's already in there working out. And, you know, so they start, you know, working out, whatever. And Kobe's just, like, still going. Like, at this point, he's already, like, drenched in sweat, you know, whatever, right? So the dude, like, does his whole workout, finishes, and they're like, dude, like, what gives? Like, how are you still in here? Like, right, I've done my entire workout. And Kobe's just like, well, I was actually about to, you know, finish up, and then I saw you come in. And I just wanted to make sure you knew that you weren't going to outwork me. Like, that's the kind of mentality that Kobe had. You know, in terms of, like memories of, like, what I got to see, I mean, honestly, man, I think, you know, his last game is one of my favorite memories. You could just see in that moment, like, that was that full circle moment of, like, Kobe wanting to, like, get his teammates involved, wanting to, you know, not make it all about him in that moment. And his teammates were like, nah, man, it's all about you. He put up, like, 60 points in his final game. And you could just tell, like, the passion was there. Like, he loved the game. And that's, you know, that's why that moment was special to me. So Lamar says, RIP Kobe, Jalen Hurts, got Mamba mentality. That's the edge for the Eagles with two teams that are so evenly matched. Got to go with the better QB. I mean, listen, you guys definitely had a better QB. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I'm just going to tell you, man, we got a bunch of dudes with that Mamba mentality as well on the other side of the field. Don't think that, you know, it's just one guy out there with a Mamba mentality now.
It's not just one guy on the Eagles with a Mamba mentality either, sir.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. QB1 having it is going to be important. I like to call him QB1 because it's QB1.
But, you know, I'm going to just throw this out there real quick. I know you haven't said anything about this, but, you know, I've heard a lot of Eagles fans this week talking about how Brock Purdy didn't put up the best of numbers against Dallas last week and how he looked kind of like a rookie and all this other stuff. And I just want to remind all the Eagles fans who have been running around saying that this week that earlier this season, Jalen Hurts didn't look too hot against Dallas either. Only had 155 yards, and you could talk about the fact he had two touchdowns if you want, but the fact is he didn't throw the ball that much. He wasn't asked to do a lot in that game. And if San Francisco can maybe come up with a similar game plan and hold him in check the same way, this game could become a very different outcome than what a lot of Eagles fans think it might. Don't expect Jalen Hurts to go out there and put up 350 yards.
He might combine for 350 because he can run the ball too.
He's not gonna run the ball that much. We haven't allowed 100-yard rusher since like 2018 or some craziness.
Well, every streak comes to an end at some point. Even the sun goes down, the heroes eventually die as well.
So Lamar says, I hear you, but when that mentality is at the most important position in the NFL, it makes a difference. Well, I mean, listen, man, I hear where you're coming from, but do you honestly believe that a seventh round Mr. Irrelevant playing in his rookie season wins this many straight games without having a Mamba mentality himself? Yes, Jalen is the better quarterback. I do not argue with you whatsoever. But don't let's not act like we're just gonna go out there and lay down for these guys.
I don't think anyone said you were gonna go and lay down. But I mean, that's how you want to take it.
What he says, I think it's gonna come down to which defense gets the most turnovers. I mean, look, there's a lot of things that could decide this game, right? Turnovers.
We're not throwing the ball to Quez Watkins, so they ain't get turnovers.
Yeah, whichever coach makes the dumbest decision.
Right? Well, we know which coach is going to make the dumbest decision, so there's no need to sugarcoat that. We know who's going to make the dumbest decision.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
There's going to be a coach on the Eagles sideline that does that. But yeah. We are not, and I repeat, not going to throw the ball to Quez Watkins. So y'all can cover him if you want to. He is not getting the ball.
Well, I appreciate you letting us know that, man. We'll go ahead and put that in the scouting report. Definitely not going to throw the ball to Quez Watkins.
Unless he's wide open. And he catches the ball, runs to somebody's close, that he better get down. His own player's going to knock him down.
We're not going to throw to Debo or George Kittle or Brandon Ayuk either. So just leave those guys open while you're at it.
Yeah, it's really stupid to say.
I mean, it's worth a try, man. It's worth a try. No, I mean, like I said, man, like, look, I've been saying it for months, right? Pretty much all season. These are the two best teams, in my opinion, in the NFC, maybe even the whole NFL. And this was the matchup I knew was coming. I've said that Philadelphia is the only team that could potentially beat us. And to be honest, I think we're the only team that could potentially beat them.
Yeah, this reminds me of back in the day. And if you're a fan of the Bengals or the Chiefs, you may not be happy about this. But this reminds me of back in the day when the NFC kind of like, right, whoever came out of the NFC was always kind of looked at like, okay, that's the team that's going to win. I do think if Kansas City does win, everybody's going to point to Kansas City because they're going to say two more weeks for Mahomes to get healthy. You know, he's going to be dangerous. And if somehow the Cincinnati Bengals, against my best belief, find a way to win, then you're going to hear, oh, the Cincinnati Bengals even went out and beat the great Patrick Mahomes 2 years in a row. There's no way they're going to lose in the Super Bowl the second time. So, like I said before, I've said this a lot, whichever team wins this game is still going to be looked at as the underdog because they ain't play nobody, because they're going to look at the other team as nobody. The media is. So it's cool. It's it's what it is. There's only one way to shut people up. Win this game, win the Super Bowl, shut people up. That's what it's all about. If you don't win the Super Bowl, you don't win this game, you haven't completed your mission for the year at this point.
So one thing I do want to throw out here real quick, man, is this is not related to our game, but I've been hearing a lot of this the last couple weeks now. This foolish idea that Brock Purdy has already solidified himself as the 2023 starter for the 49ers, regardless of what happens this weekend.
You know what, man? You can save that. You can have your own soapbox topic next week because we're going to be in between the NFL games. So whatever happens next week, you can have your own soapbox and you can talk as much as you want about the reasons why that is incorrect.
Oh, I'm going to just make this very simple, actually. So Lamar actually says he gives Brock credit. He hasn't had a lot of turnovers and he has made some plays when asked. And that's, I mean, listen, man, we've won a lot of playoff games with Jimmy Garoppolo doing next to nothing. I'm just saying. So all I'm going to say on the Brock Purdy thing, and that I can dive more into all the fundamentals of this at a later time. But I'm just going to say stop, okay? Trey Lance is still bigger, stronger, better arm, more athletic. He just needs the reps. If you put Trey Lance into a position where he's actually able to go out there and react the way that Brock Purdy is, he's still going to be a better quarterback. I'm not suggesting we need to get rid of Brock Purdy or that he might not even be the starter next year. But slow your roll. Let's stop trying to ship Trey Lance off to the Houston Texans. Okay, I just want to just throw that out real quick. You know, just kind of hearing it. But real quick, man, you know, I know we're already at time, but, you know, real quick, a couple other things to talk about. First of all, a couple of RIPs. So Billy Packer, as well as Jay Briscoe.
Yep.
So did you have some thoughts that you'd like to share on those?
I'd just say for Billy Packer, man, one of the voices of college sports for a long time. Loved his enthusiasm, loved what he did for the sport. Definitely a guy that will be appreciated and missed. And then for Jay Briscoe, for those that watch professional wrestling, one half of the Briscoe Brothers tag team, probably the greatest tag team in the history of Ring of Honor. Hated to see him pass away in the accident the way he did so suddenly. they did a, for those who watch AEW, they did a tribute for him, had a tribute match and everything. And it was great. Obviously, still sucks, but it's just the way things go sometimes, man. But at least they were here for us to, you know, be able to carry on the legacies that they were trying to make or did they did make.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just echo your sentiments there. Definitely, our thoughts go out to their families,
mm-hmm.
and those that were close to them. So,
yes, sir.
Lamar responded to my comment earlier that we gave up so much to get Trey Lance too soon to involve him. I agree. I cannot argue with that. So we did have our first head coaching hire, which I'm a little bit surprised we've only had one. But then again, we only have a small number of jobs that are actually open. So maybe it's not as surprising as in years past. What are your thoughts on Frank Wright getting the Carolina job? I know that's not who either one of us thought should get it, but
Frank Wright is the correct color to have the job in Carolina as the head coach. He doesn't have the right qualifications. He had a good situation and he blew it, bringing in a quarterback that he should have known he couldn't fix. I thought he would go back to the OC ranks for a couple of years, maybe get another shot. This is another example of the Panthers being inept and making a quality decision for their franchise. Another way to set themselves back. Wilkes is going to probably end up with a job somewhere, if not this year, in the future. And when he does get another opportunity, a real opportunity, he's going to be great. And the Panthers are going to have shot themselves in the foot again. Because Matt Rhule's didn't work. Frank Reich is not going to work. So if you're a Panthers fan, you're watching, man, I'm sorry for you. But, hey, your ownership and the people who are making the decisions, they're the real problem.
Yeah. So Lamar says, Panthers are fools. Wilkes did more than enough to keep that job. And I agree. I mean, I said I thought that Wilkes should be the guy to get it. The team clearly played well for him. They, were in contention for the division even after everyone just thought they were going to fold it in for the season. So very disappointed that they did not give Wilkes that job. They went out and got a guy who, like you said, was in a good situation, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse in Indianapolis. And I, like you, thought, there's no way this guy's going to have to go be an OC for a year or two at least before somebody's going to give him another opportunity. And here we are. The Panthers are going out and grabbing him. I mean, he's not a bad coach, but I mean, let's be legitimate, man. For him to be the first guy off the board, kind of disappointing considering some of the other potential names that are out there.
Not kind of, very disappointing. And Lamar makes a great point here as well. Never trust a guy that gets replaced by an ESPN commentator. All I can say to you, Lamar, is, oh, my brother, testify. And I'm going to hit you with the real quick.
So, yeah. Now, one guy who is off the market is Dan Quinn in Dallas. So this, to me, is good news, bad news for Dallas fans, right? Good news, because this was really a big piece for you. I mean, your defense was actually really, really good this year. The problem is, I don't know how much more you're going to really be able to do to make the defense any better. And clearly it wasn't good enough to overcome Dak. And Dak's still going to be there. So I don't really know that this actually does anything for you guys. And Lamar says, "Get the tables."
Now, Dan Quinn stated he's staying because he has, and I quote, "unfinished business."
It's going to remain unfinished, Dan.
The only thing that I can think of is that he has assurances that when that head coaching job comes available, that he's going to be moving into the big seat.
Hold on, let's go ahead and let's go and make sure that we complete the rest of that last sentence. When the coaching job becomes available, when Dallas gets eliminated once again during the playoffs next year, he has assurances the job is his. Wink, wink. No one listening and not watching the video can see you
winking. Yeah, wink, wink. Yeah, lots of winks.
But yeah, I agree with you, man. I mean, that's the only thing that really makes sense, because he can't reasonably believe that the Cowboys are a favorite to win the championship next year. He can't.
He definitely can't. If he does, then instead of drug testing everybody else, he needs to be drug tested every week.
They might need to check in for some CTE or something. I don't know what, because that's just crazy talk right there, bro. Like, no. There's no way. Did you honestly, truly believe that?
The fact that you said it was even crazier.
So, you know, D'Amico Ryans, who I've already, you know, come to the very sad conclusion that unless he just decides that he hates every last one of these job opportunities, he's gone, right? He's getting a head coach, which, I mean, listen, I'm happy for D'Amico. I'm just sad for us to lose him, because he is a phenomenal coach. But apparently he's the front runner for, you know, like almost every job remaining, is kind of what it feels like. There are reports that he's the front runner for the Texans and the Broncos. Those are the only two interviews that he has not yet canceled. He's supposed to be doing interviews with both of those teams next week, apparently. So, you know, very wise of him to not take the time to do interviews, which will show you the difference between Dallas and Philadelphia to me too, right? The fact that D'Amico Ryans was going to do 4 interviews last week, and then he canceled 2 of them, but he still did 2. And then in the Philadelphia game, he's like, nah, I'm focused this week. I ain't no interviews going on this week at all. I'll see y'all next week.
Smart decision, Mr. Ryans.
Very smart.
You play in the green. You know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think D'Amico Ryans is going to get a job. I think he's going to get whatever job he chooses. I think he is going to have a choice of jobs.
I think that's reasonable to think.
And, you know, I personally, if I'm him, I'm probably going to Houston. I mean, I know we talked about it, and I agree. It's not a good look with what's gone on there the last 2 years, especially if you're an African-American coach. I think that D'Amico Ryans is more than smart enough to have had that conversation with them and really kind of figure out like what's going on. But you do have a situation there where you have some good pieces on defense. You have a good young running back already. You have at least have a wide receiver. You have no quarterback. You need to get a quarterback there. But you do have some really high draft picks and some cap space. So it's a good situation from the football side of things. The question is from the organizational side. That's where, if he doesn't take that job, that's what I think would keep him from doing it. Is there to be something the organizational side that he's not feeling?
Hey, don't y'all forget about your boy, Jonathan Gannon over there, y'all.
You still trying to get rid of
Jonathan Gannon? I'm talking to you. Houston, I'm talking to you.
I am. Go to Arizona. Arizona needs somebody too.
Yeah, I mean, you could go to Arizona. You could.
Yeah, Arizona, you know, that might be who you need to focus on. So, you know. No, you try to get rid
Stetson of Stetson could go there as well, you know. Yeah. Wouldn't be too upset.
You trying to get rid of anybody you can at this point?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
So, any other coaching stuff that you want to talk about? Any other topics you want to bring up here real quick before we sign off? We're pretty
Well,
far over, but you know.
Dallas got rid of a bunch of people.
Okay. They get
Ha
rid of.
like five of their coaches on the coaching staff they got rid of. I'm not gonna waste the time to name them all, but
I hope one of them was a quarterback coach.
I will say, way to go, Dallas, because you didn't get rid of who you should have got rid of, which is Kellen Moore. So hey, you can pass the buck to other people. Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott are your issues.
Unfortunately for Dallas, the other big issue they have is one they can't get rid of. That would be Jerry Jones. I mean, listen, I've said this before, man, but I'm going to just put it out there for people. To me, the problem in Dallas is very simple. It's an organizational issue. It's the fact that they truly believe that by virtue alone of having that star in their helmet that they're special. They think that all they have to do is just say, we're Dallas, and that's good enough.
Excuse me.
And the thing is, yes, you know what? They're gonna probably go make some moves, try to get a little better in the offseason. They're gonna still do all these things. But you know what? Jerry Jones is still gonna meddle. Dak's still gonna Dak. Kellen Moore still is going to make stupid decisions. And the two teams that are playing in the NFC Championship game this weekend are also going to get better in the offseason. So sorry, Dallas. Your best case scenario is you stay the third best team in the NFC.
It is what it is.
And to quote Paul Heyman, that's not a prediction.
Let's get it.
So yeah, final words, final thoughts you want to share?
I'm Gucci.
Well, then we will see y'all back next Friday. If you join us live, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, you can also catch us on the podcast, any one of your favorite podcast players. So, you know, be sure to check that out. If you are joining us on YouTube, do us a favor. Please like the video. That lets YouTube know that this is the place to be. If you haven't already, subscribe. Help us get to that 1,000 subscriber mark. We'll see y'all back next week.
I told you I want the only one. I